It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, Tony Vernetti. And Tony is with us today. He's the executive director of OmniGov Training Institute, which is working with the EEOC to put on a new conference that we'll be discussing this morning. And to help us discuss that and other EEOC initiatives, I am delighted to have as our guest on Fed Talk, Dexter Brooks, director of the Federal Sector Programs at the EEOC. Dexter, welcome to Fed Talk.
Good morning.
And we also have Jo Linda Johnson, and Jo Linda is the Director of Federal Training and Outreach at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Jo Linda, welcome to Fed Talk.
Thank you, Bill. Good morning, everyone.
And before we get started, I'd just like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. Also, we have a couple of emails that we'll be getting to later in the show, but if you would like to talk to our guests at the EEOC and or send us an email, please feel free to do so. You can call us on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Dexter, why don't we start out with you? You're the head of the Federal Sector Programs. What does that mean?
Well, at EEOC, you know, we're an independent federal agency that primary mission is to eradicate workplace discrimination in our nation. The federal government, as an employer, is the nation's largest employer. So we have a separate office at EEOC that addresses issues that pertain to federal employment. So we call that the Office of Federal Operations. And within that office, we have two large programs. One is a pellet program that deals with complaints that are filed by federal employees. They have appeal rights that that can rise all the way to the commission level for final determination. And so one of our programs, the Appellate Review Program, actually serves as that final appeal body in the administrative complaint process. And then the program that I'm responsible for, Federal Sector Programs, is the more proactive side of the office. When Congress enacted the statutes that created a niche for federal sector employment, which is under Title VII, Section 717, and under the Rehab Act, Section 501, it said that the federal government should do more than just not discriminate, that the federal government should be a model employer and have programs in place to make sure that it maximizes opportunity for all its citizens, and required certain affirmative employment programs and reports to be reported to EEOC annually so that we can monitor the progress of the federal government in its pursuit to become a model employer. So our program actually does that side of oversight. We provide guidance, technical assistance, training to the federal community to help them meet that statutory goal of becoming a model employer. So we have three divisions. One we call agency oversight, and they work directly with the agencies in a customer service type of way. We have our reports and evaluation unit that actually collects data and submits and creates reports, specific reports on issues, and then we do an annual report to the President and Congress. And then we have our training and outreach division, and you have the director of that program on the show today that provides fee-based and free outreach, fee-based training and free outreach to our federal stakeholders. So in a nutshell, that's what we do. We're trying to assist federal agencies in becoming model employers and fill ourselves as a partner with our federal agencies.
And Dexter, just to be clear for our listeners who are not normally familiar with how the EEOC operates, this is, there are essentially, I call, two parts. There's the EEOC that eradicates or enforces discrimination laws across the country for private sector employers. But what we're talking about today is a special part within the EEOC that just deals with the federal sector?
Yes. Well, EEOC, like I said before, the broader mission is to eradicate workplace discrimination in our nation. And so any employer over 15 employees comes under our jurisdiction. And so in the private sector, if an employee believes that they've been discriminated based on one of the bases protected under statute, they can come to one of our local offices. We have 53 offices around the country, and they can initiate the charge process. And we have investigators that look into it. If we believe that there's a problem or we believe there's discrimination, then we have the opportunity to sue an employer in federal district court. And so we have a team of trial attorneys spread throughout the country that actually litigates against private companies in court. We don't sue in every case. You know, we were strategic in the cases that we bring the lawsuit. If we don't choose to sue, or if we don't believe there's cause to we don't believe there was discrimination in a particular case, we issue the party a right to sue letter, and then that employee can then pursue that matter in federal court. There is a third category of employees with state, local, municipal employees that have rights that flow through our charge process, but ultimately, if it goes to litigation, the Justice Department litigates those cases. But in the federal sector, we do not sue federal agencies in federal court. We have an administrative process where we serve as the neutral adjudicator, and we provide oversight of that process. Quite a bit of that process resides internally within the federal agency, where their first process is to try to resolve it through EEO counseling. Then if they cannot resolve it, then the employee has the right to file a formal complaint. The agency then decides whether to accept it or dismiss it. If they accept it, they must investigate it to determine the facts that surround that issue. And then at the completion of the investigation, the employee is given the right to decide how they want to proceed in view of the investigative report that they receive from the agency. They can get a decision from the agency. At this point, they can opt out of the agency's process and come to EEOC for a hearing. Or if they choose to do what private sector employees do and file a civil action in federal district court, then they can do that as well.
That's an excellent overview, Dexter. Thank you. I'm on behalf of our listeners. And I think as long as we're talking about the organization, the EEOC as an organization, since I sent you down that road, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about how the commissioners work and how the commissioners interact.
Yes, the organization, we're a bipartisan, independent federal agency. We're a commission. So we have a five-person commission that's appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. Our composition is supposed to be bipartisan in the sense that the sitting president can have no more than three members of his or her party. The full composition of the commission is five commissioners. So at this moment, we're very fortunate because we have a full quorum of commissioners. We have our chair, who is Jacqueline Berrien, who is a longtime civil rights practitioner, former associate counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. We have Stuart Ishimura, who's our longest-serving commissioner, who has a long background in civil rights on the Hill and with the Justice Department. We have Costas Barker, who's a trial attorney and partner in a prestigious firm down in Alabama. And we have Kai Feldblum. No, I'm just doing them in order.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that.
That's okay. I'm trying to test my own knowledge. Yeah, Kai Feldblum, who's a professor at Georgetown Law School, a longtime disability advocate and a knowledgeable person who's worked on several of these issues for the last 20 years. And then we have Victoria Lipnick, who also wealth the background in federal service with the Postal Service, with Department of Labor. So we're very fortunate. We have a very knowledgeable commission, and they actually set the direction and policy of the organization. We're administratively led through the chair's office, but the commissioners are a vital part of what we do in both the private and federal sector.
And Joe Linda, let's give Dexter a break there and tell us a little bit about your responsibilities as the director, the head of training and outreach.
Sure, and I appreciate you not testing me with any quizzes.
No, we'd already agreed that we were going to do that to Dexter.
I appreciate that. As Dexter said, I direct a federal training and outreach program for the EEOC, and what that means is my office puts together most of the training classes that you will find at the EEOC Training Institute. We offer 12 courses for primarily federal audiences, but we certainly get members of the public, general public, from folks from state and local as well who attend our classes. And that includes classes like the required classes that are outlined in our regulations for new federal counselors, new federal investigators. We offer a mediation course. We offer refresher courses for counselors and investigators. We have a two-day training for managers and supervisors within federal agencies to really get into the meat of what their rights and responsibilities are when it comes to the civil rights laws. We offer a three-day class on disability program manager basics. Most federal agencies have a disability program manager, and as you all might know, this is a hot issue these days with the president recently signing an executive order ordering the federal government to become the model employer of individuals with disabilities, and a lot of agencies are finding themselves behind the eight ball and trying to meet the demands of that executive order. And our disability program manager basics class helps agencies train their personnel to meet the needs of individuals with disabilities within their agencies as well as bring them in. We offer a class on final agency actions, and we also offer a couple of classes that deal with MD 715. Management Directive 715 is the policy document that OFO has, the commission really has issued for all federal agencies in setting up and maintaining a model EEO program. As well, we offer a class on letters of acceptance and dismissal, as well as a half-day EEO laws refresher that we update with recent Supreme Court cases, recent regs, recent laws, to the extent that we have any. That's our fee-based side, and all of those classes are open enrollment classes that are offered through our EEO Training Institute. As well, we bring those classes on site for agencies who would like them. In addition to that, my division handles all of the federal outreach requests. Outreach meaning they're not fee-based. We provide them for free when federal agencies need a speaker to come out and talk for an hour on a particular topic at a conference they might have. We often attend the affinity conferences like BIG and FEW, FAPAC, SAGE, things like that. So we do a lot. We reach out to all of our federal partners to make sure that they have the knowledge they need to have a model EEO program and to uphold the civil rights laws.
And Joe Linda, how does somebody sign up for the training? How do they find out more about it if they want to?
Sure. The EEOC's Training Institute website is www.eeotraining.eeoc.gov, and you'll find all 12 of the classes that I mentioned there. You can go and enroll. Anyone is welcome to enroll. They are open enrollment courses. If someone would like to bring one of those courses on site, they can send an email to our overall mailbox, which is Federal Training and Outreach, all one word, Federal Training and Outreach at eeoc.gov.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm talking to Dexter Brooks and Linda Johnson of the EEOC. We'll be right back.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the Government Employees Insurance Company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and I'm here with my co-host in studio, Bill Bransford. And we're talking about EEOC initiatives with Dexter Brooks and Joe Linda Johnson from the EEOC. If you have a question or comment about our show or for our guests, please give us a call at 1-877-936-9333. Or you can always email us a question at fedtalk.com. At federalnewsradio.com. And speaking of emails, we got one email in here that I'd like to read. It's a sort of a general question, but I think it's good to throw these out there so that the folks have an idea where to go and what to do. This person writes, I have a question regarding supervisors denying career ladder promotions. How can EEO assist an employee if they believe this is based on discrimination due to a physical disability?
Well, if the person believes that the denial of any benefit or privilege of employment is because of a protected basis, then they can initiate the EEO process, which means they need to find out within their organization through their intranet or through postings in common areas, where does an individual go to initiate the process? And what they would do is initiate that, and what the agency would then do would assign a counselor to that issue to see if there's any way to resolve the issue before it becomes a formal complaint. The counseling process can take 30 days. It can be extended up to 90 days. But at the end of that period, if the employee doesn't believe that their issue can be resolved through that process, they have the right to file a formal complaint with the agency. And all that information on their rights and responsibilities should be provided to the employee during that initial session with their EEO counselor. So if that employee believes that's going on, I encourage them to check their sources within their agency, whether it be their intranet or external website or within their common areas, a break room, a lunch room, where they have postings of information so that they can find out where to initiate the process. And then the process will look into to determine if the denial of promotion was based on disability, and if so, there are make-whole relief available to the employee.
Well, I think an important thing to emphasize, you know, that's in a, you know, a real basic question like this is, you know, every agency has a very well staffed and with a lot of information, the EEO office, and it's there to really advise and inform employees of what their rights are. So, you know, in this case, employee, you know, may not know, you know, whether this is because of discrimination or really, you know, what is unlawful under all the fair employment laws. And the important thing to emphasize is during that counseling period is the agency is really there to educate the employee. And we talk about the federal government being a model employer, you know, that's, you know, there's nothing else like it out there.
Right. So the counselor will give them a full range of information. They won't decide. Sometimes folks think they'll go to the counselor and the counselor will make a decision as to whether or not there was discrimination. The counselor's initial inquiry is to get all, like you said, get all the relevant information so that we have the information necessary to decide how to proceed in the matter. And the counselor will try to resolve the issue by talking to the management official that's involved with the circumstances. But you're right, it's a unique process where the federal government's main intent is to try to resolve issues before we get into formal legal mechanisms.
Right. And another thing I would emphasize there for managers who get contacted during that process, when you're in the informal stage, you know, they'll call me or, you know, they'll call Bill here and say, you know, somebody's filed against me. It's not a case yet, okay? You know, it's just in the informal process and they're simply reaching out to you to see if there's a way to resolve it before it becomes a federal case, which is the next step.
That's correct.
I want to shift gears a little bit, Joe Linda, and talk about the upcoming EEOC Executive Leadership Conference.
Great.
That is scheduled to go for the first week of May, May 3 through 5, to be specific, and it's at the beautiful Hyatt Regency and the Chesapeake Bay and here in Cambridge, Maryland. Before we get into the specifics of the conference, why don't you give our listeners a little background since, you know, about why this type of conference and what's it all about since it's essentially your brainchild.
Well, I won't take much of the credit for that, actually. It's not my brainchild. It actually came from feedback that the EEOC has received over the years from EEO directors and senior leaders in the EEO field who were starving for some leadership training that they could not find otherwise. EEOC obviously puts on a conference every year called the Excel Conference, and we certainly get many EEO practitioners who attend that conference, but some of the feedback we received from EEO practitioners, senior practitioners, was that the Excel Conference, while it was fantastic for their entry-level folks, it was wonderful for their mid-level career folks, they weren't necessarily getting the senior executive leadership type training that they were looking for. And EEOC, we certainly like to be responsive to the needs of our customers and our partners in the federal government. And so over the last couple of years, the idea of putting together a leadership conference for senior executives in the EEO field has been bandied about. And this year I decided I was willing to take on this task and put this together because I think it's a very worthwhile event. Our goal for this conference is certainly not to replace Excel. The Excel conference stands alone as the premier EEO conference, and we're going to continue with that. But the idea behind this conference is not to talk about EEO topics necessarily, but it's to talk about the kinds of things that leaders need to know to succeed, senior executives need to know to succeed. And that serves the EEOC's purpose in helping all federal agencies to become model employers. We need those EEO executives to be well-versed in budget issues and appropriations issues, in business communication, in executive communication, in working with politicals, in the powers of negotiation when you really are negotiating from a position of not a lot of power. When you're the person at the table with the least amount of power, we still need you to be influential with your senior leaders in your federal agency to make sure that the principles of having a model agency are well known across the board in your agency. So we're really excited about this conference. We're excited about the offerings. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's our first one this year, and we certainly hope to make it a regular thing.
Joe Linder, are you looking for just senior executives or up-and-coming future leaders?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. Our goal for this conference is to keep it at a fairly senior level, but that doesn't mean only members of the SES are invited. What we have said and what I think we're trying to limit it to are sort of the 14s, 15s, and SESs out there.
The people who are running EEO programs in the government are likely to be doing that in the near future?
Exactly. Your directors and your deputy directors.
Right. Absolutely. Chief EEO officers, people that are really responsible for, you know, running and enforcing the programs. When Jolinda first talked to me about this conference, I was real excited about it. You know, it's very similar as a lawyer or any subject matter expertise. You grow up in these agencies and your organization becoming an expert on the substantive area. You know, in this case, the substantive EEO law, and the related ones. And then all of a sudden you're in charge of a large organization and nobody's really taught you how to be, you know, a great leader or has communicated a lot of those skills that you need to run an effective organization.
Particularly in the federal government, because that has its own unique aspects. And it sounds like that's what you put together with this great program.
That's certainly what we're trying to do. And I think, Bill, that's a great point. There are unique aspects to being a leader in a federal agency that don't necessarily come naturally. They're not necessarily all that intuitive. And we want our EEO directors to be successful because we want their programs to be successful.
Right. And not only that, I mean, I think there are unique aspects to leading an EEO organization and how, you know, that organization interacts with the other agency components. And that's kind of the idea. You know, I mean, there are plenty of executive level development conferences, courses, programs out there. But what makes this one unique, you know, being designed by the EEOC, is it's really tailored to those skills that the EEOC believes, you know, the EEO professionals, directors really need to carry on.
And what I heard about this program, Joe Linda, is it's not, I mean, even it, you put it together, you made the decision to go ahead with this year, but this is something the whole EEOC and all of the commissioners are behind as far as I can tell.
As far as I can tell as well. I think the commissioners are excited about it. Our chair is certainly behind it. Our chair and our COO attended Excel last year for the first time, and our COO in particular sat in on a couple of sessions and I think she formed her own opinions about the type of leadership training that might be needed for the EEO community. And so when we pitched, my office pitched this idea to her, she was 100% behind it and got the chair behind it and thought it was a fantastic idea. So I think they're looking forward to a successful conference. We're all looking forward to a successful conference.
I want to direct people to the website to get more information on workshops. It's www.eeocleadershipconference.com. That's EEOCLeadershipConference.com, or they can give us a call at 202-331-0004. And just to quickly run through a list of some of the courses and workshops that you can expect. There are going to be things like 5 things every executive should know about appropriations law. There's going to be a primer on federal personnel law. There's going to be a session on how to develop in-house training programs, financial management and budget development. We're excited about, we're going to have Daomi in to talk about how to do an effective climate survey, public speaking techniques for executives, what every executive should know about FOIA and Privacy Act, teaching workplace diversity. And this is the one's interesting about this is it's not about, you know, all the EEO, you know, directors, but, you know, they're experts in diversity. They know what it means. They know why it's important. But maybe what they can learn a little bit more about is how to go out into the agency, the other agency components and PowerPoints throughout the organization, and really communicate that message to them. You know, how to take these, you know, these responsibilities that you have agency-wide and get them out there and, you know, throughout the agency and have them help carry out your mission. And, you know, then we're going to have, you know, a lot of courses, you know, just about professional development, a lot of things that promote professional and personal excellence. We're going to have courses on stress management, time management. So we're real excited about the lineup. Please go to the website to get more information on the exact courses at EEOCLeadershipConference.com.
We're going to take a short break right now. We'll continue with our discussion with Dexter Brooks and Jolinda Johnson right after this word from our sponsor. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS 7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact GEICO. Tell him, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk, and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For 2 decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and I'm joined in studio with my co-host, Bill Bransford. And we are talking about the EEOC's Executive Leadership Conference with Dexter Brooks and Jolinda Johnson, who are on the phone from the EEOC. If you'd like to be part of our discussion today, give us a call at 877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Jolinda, just to talk a little bit more about the conference, what can you tell us about some of the plenary sessions we'll have and the involvement of, I guess, the senior the senior folks at the EOC, the commissioners and such?
Sure. Let's start with the EEOC folks and other government folks that have been invited to attend and have indicated that they will participate. Certainly the chair of the EEOC has been invited, and we expect her to open the session. The commissioners here are also invited to participate, and we expect them to have a what we would call loosely sort of a commissioner's panel, where audience members who may not get a chance to interact with commissioners on a regular basis have a chance to ask them questions, and as well the commissioners will have a chance to talk with the audience and let them know what issues they're working on, what's important to them, what's happening in their office. Beyond the EEOC, we've also reached out to our partners at OPM. OPM has a unique role, obviously, in educating the federal government and educating senior-level personnel in the federal government, especially. They obviously have the Federal Executive Institute. But because most folks in the federal government don't get a chance to attend FEI, we've reached out to OPM to ask them to lend us some folks from FEI, and we're excited that they've agreed to do so, and we expect to offer some of the courses that you would find at FEI at this conference, which, I think makes this conference a unique opportunity to bring all these things together that you can't normally find in one place, in one setting, as well as lending us folks from FEI. We have invited the senior leaders from OPM to participate, and we don't yet have an answer on which one it will be, but I fully expect that one or both actually will join us for the conference. They're certainly behind it, and we look forward to having them. For the plenary sessions, we've got a couple of great lineups that we're excited about. Jones Laughlin is a group out of Boston, I believe, who put out a book on really, I think executive management would be a good way to describe it, called Juggling Elephants. And, you know, the question everybody asks, of course, is how do you juggle elephants? And the premise of their book, their paper, and their work is that you can't. You have to set priorities, and you have to know how to set priorities appropriately to accomplish what you're trying to do. And they're dynamic speakers. They're going to come out and offer a plenary session as well as a workshop that I think will be of a fantastic benefit to the attendees of the conference. And we're working on a closing plenary right now that I think is going to be inspirational to everyone. So I really look forward to a fantastic conference and a beautiful setting to sort of give everybody a boost in May.
Yeah, in addition to those that Jolinda mentioned, some other folks in industry that are donating their time and folks to help us would be Management Concepts and Monster.com are giving us a couple sessions as well. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention we're going to have the mayor of Cambridge do a little history for us on Cambridge, because unbeknownst to at least Jolinda and myself, there is significant civil rights history. There from the early 60s, so we'll be excited to learn about that. And I do want to let our listeners know that the early bird registration fee of $749 has been extended to March 15th. So you only have a few days left before it goes up to $795. So we encourage you to get to the website or give us a call at 202-331-0004.
All right, Dexter. One of the things that I always look forward to every year is the annual report numbers from the EOC. Where are those this year?
The annual report in the federal sector, we collect data from federal agencies through two primary vehicles. We collect complaints data through what we call Form 462. So agencies will upload their activity from counseling all the way through final disposition of cases to EEOC. And we collect that normally in the fall between October and November of every year. Then the second body of information that we collect from agencies is through EEOC's Management Directive 715, which derives from the statutes that I referred to earlier. And we collect workforce demographic data as well as data that corresponds to opportunities within the agency, from applicants tracking to career development programs, training, discipline, and things of that nature, just to see if there are any statistical information that may indicate problems within a particular agency. So we collect all this data, and we also collect their best practices and their action items that they're working on in terms of improving their programs. And we collect all that information and we synthesize it into an annual report to the President and Congress. Usually we get that report out late spring, early summer is our goal to get the report out. The data comes in at different times, so we get the 462 complaint data in at the first quarter of the fiscal year, and then we get the MD 715 demographic data in the second quarter of the fiscal year. So I don't have good data on the MD 715. We're compiling it and we're actually getting that together. So what we do have is our complaints data compiled pretty much. And so some of the trends that we've seen for FY 2010 is that we've seen an increase in the number, in the activity.
In complaints filed?
Yeah, in terms of counseling that we talked about first, when they seek the informal process, we've seen about a 4% increase, and we've seen about a 4% increase in the number of formal complaints filed from 09 to 10. And so this trend of a moderate increase has continued for the last 3 years. We've seen moderate increase. The line, if we look at it, like we look at a 20-year trend of complaints in the federal government, it's pretty flat. But over the last 3 years, we've seen a subtle uptick.
But it had gone down. Didn't it go down for a few years?
Oh, yeah. We had a nice period of time from 2001 to about 2006. In 2007, where the numbers went down drastically. And so, have we gotten back to the point where we were in 99 and 2000? No, we're nowhere near those numbers. But we've seen moderate increases, 2%, and this year we have about 4% increase. So, is there a reason to be alarmed by it? No. Should we always monitor and be concerned with increases? Yes. But the line still is staying pretty flat. So we're at about 17,500 complaints that were filed in 2010. And be mindful, that's from a body of 2.8 million federal employees. So we had, out of the 2.8 million federal employees, we've had 17,500 complaints, which roughly is less than 1% of the federal workforce.
Well, one of the things I always look in the report, Dexter, is how long it takes for EEO complaints. And I've been noticing a steady decline in complaint processing time. Is that, do you have any preview information on whether that decline in the amount of time is continuing?
Right. We have good news and we have not so good news, but one of the good news that they're staying on path is federal agencies are really doing a much better job of investigating allegations of discrimination internally. The regulatory time frame is 180 days, and a few years ago in that period between 2000 and 2006, you know, the time frames were well over 250 days. Agencies now are right at the regulatory time frame and consistently have been at it for the last 3 years. We've seen a decrease in the time of processing time of investigations from 09 to 10. So we've seen about a 2% reduction in time. Agencies are right at that regulatory time frame of 180 days, which is great news. The percentage of individual complaints that's completed timely has increased again this year, so that's our good news. Agencies are doing a much better job in processing investigations. The area of concern is that we're tracking is the amount of time it takes an agency to issue its final decision. If they investigate a case and the employee requests a decision from the agency, which they have a right to request, then the agency, by regulation, is required to submit that final agency determination within 60 days. And what we've seen is over the last 4 years, we've seen a steady increase in the time it's taken agencies to actually process that final agency decision. So this year, that trend has tracked it up. So we've had an uptick in that processing time for the last 4 years. And so it's well above the 60-day regulatory time frame, closer to almost to 300 days on average. So that's one of our areas of concern. So we're going to probably study that area and probably put out a report in the next fiscal year or two to help agencies find better ways of processing the decisions that they're rendering through the final agency decision process.
Dexter, is the use of ADR and increased use of mediation throughout the federal government, does that affect these numbers, and are there separate, I guess, statistics dealing with that and the various successes or not?
Yeah, I mean, there are separate statistics. We like to isolate statistics so that we can evaluate each point of the process. And ADR, alternate dispute resolution, mediation, as the primary form used in the federal government, are an important part of our process because we believe parties should resolve their disputes internally if possible. That way folks can feel comfortable getting back to work more so than having an intermediate such as EEOC coming in and rendering a verdict. So we track ADR. And ADR and EEO counseling, which we also consider a form of dispute resolution, has been very successful. In terms of the number of cases that come to counseling, last year we had just a slightly over 40,000 issues presented through EEO counseling that resulted in only 17,500 cases. So we're saying close to 60% of the issues brought to counseling did not go into a formal complaint. Either they were resolved or withdrawn by the party during that informal process that utilizes ADR and counseling. So it's an extremely important part of the process. Quite a few issues in statistically, the bulk of issues are resolved during the informal process rather than the formal complaint process.
This is Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back to wrap up with Dexter Brooks and Jolinda Johnson of the EEOC after this short break.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are entering our last segment of the show. If you have a question or comment for our guest, call us on our toll-free number, 877-936-9333. Or you can email us your question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. When we took our break, Dexter, we were talking a little bit about ADR, and there's one thing that I always, every time I get a chance, it's my little soapbox that I like to mention to folks about the successes and using mediation and ADR specifically in the federal government, because one of the biggest differences between EEO complaints and complaints in general in the private sector and the federal sector is in the federal sector, the employee that has filed the complaint is usually still your employee.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's an overriding need for, I would think, for mission, workplace harmony concerns to meet with that employee, to see if you can resolve the complaint. And like in the informal stage before it actually becomes a complaint. So I'd encourage all, you know, managers, you know, to put your ego aside sometimes. Don't take the EEO complaint personal and see if you can get in there in mediation and be objective and resolve the complaint, because you'd be surprised once you start talking, you can get there more often than not.
Let me add something to that, Tony, because in addition to being a manager at EEOC and implementing EEOC's process, I'm a manager of employees, and I know sometimes managers perceive the EEO process as they have to bend over backwards to appease an employee, but I always encourage them to use the process because it's a process to actually clear up a dialogue and have a better conversation about issues. As a manager, I've been engaged with potential conflict with employees, and sometimes having it in a different form where you can see different perspectives and hear it from a different point of view, or being able to express your point of view more directly to an employee, actually provide some benefits to managers as well.
Absolutely.
So it's not a one-sided process, and we don't intend it to be a one-sided process. The key focus of it is what you said. How do we get the parties beyond the dispute and back to the mission?
Right. I often tell managers, you know, use this as an opportunity to communicate your expectations.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes, you know, that's lost in a different environment. But where you're in this environment where you have a mediator, you know, that's more of a level playing field, folks tend to listen a little bit better. This leads us into a great email we got. It's a little bit of a difficult question. Bill wants me to ask it anyway. I'm going to summarize. This is from an individual who has prevailed in two EEO complaints, 4 years apart, and it's against the same manager, same offending manager, and the judge had found discrimination twice against this manager. And the question is, you know, why has this manager not been disciplined? And the manager in this case has actually been promoted according to this email. So the question is, you know, we know the EEOC, and the judges are not permitted to impose actual discipline against managers, but they want to know, you know, what is the EEOC doing about this, and, you know, can Congress change the law or anything?
I guess the quick answer is Congress does make laws, so they determine the scope of our authority and the coverage for which we will enforce the statutes that they put forward. So the answer to that, yes, Congress could change the law if they saw fit. But Congress did enact the Notification of Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination and Retaliation Act of 2003, and a common term for it is no fear.
No fear, right? Yeah.
To actually look at partially look at the issue of accountability. Are federal managers being held accountable if they have violated statutory law? Because the person who drafted the email is aware that EEOC doesn't have authority to issue discipline or,
right,
or remove a manager. And one of the things that No Fear does, while it doesn't say that a manager has to be removed, it requires agencies to report on actions taken for managers who have engaged in this type of behavior, that they must do some type of inquiry in terms of determining if discipline was appropriate and report that to Congress annually, so that Congress can have a view as to our agencies really holding managers accountable, or are managers allowed to act without impunity in these areas. So the answer is Congress is right now in the situation where they're gathering this information through No Fear, and they can make a more informed decision if further legislation or modification.
And that's sort of, I think that's sort of the reason in the No Fear Act they were asking for the increased reporting. Does the EEOC get this information separately as well, or do you get it through the No Fear Act reporting?
Right, because we didn't have authority for discipline, we didn't track it. So we get this information from No Fear.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
I wanted to add one thing to that. I think it's important for employees. I like to remind employees of this when I get this question quite a bit when I teach the managers and supervisors class. There's a perception that managers are not disciplined, but it's important to remember from an employee standpoint, that's your perception, but that's not necessarily in fact what happened. When an employee, period, is disciplined, it's not public knowledge. And so actions may be taken by an agency to discipline a manager when they've done something inappropriate and their employee will never know about it.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to make that point as well, because it is a common complaint,
mm-hmm,
that managers are not dealt with effectively, but sometimes they are, and sometimes managers are, you know, receive some kind of adverse consequence even before there's a finding of discrimination, just simply because an EEO complaint has been filed. So it's not a perfect system, but it's something it seems to me, Dexter, that the EEOC is paying more attention to at least making recommendations of discipline, encouraging agencies to give to require offending managers to get training, things like that.
Right. On our appellate side, when we render a decision for the commission, making that final determination in this administrative process, if the facts that are presented give an indication that a manager has engaged in conduct that's problematic, and it seems like it was intentional versus someone who just didn't know, they made an error in judgment and things of that nature. We will recommend that the agency do an inquiry into the disciplinary action. We don't do it all the time, but if the facts are there, then we will recommend that to the agency.
And I would also point out that's one of OPM's best practices that they've issued for agencies where there is a finding of discrimination, that there be an inquiry to determine whether disciplinary action is appropriate.
Well, it doesn't always have to be a finding. There could be a settlement agreement. And, you know, I know many agencies have established, such as the IRS comes to mind, established offices that will actually, you know, review the facts underlying certain settlement agreements to see if there was any, you know, wrongdoing and intentional discrimination on behalf of agency employees, and they develop a process to deal with it and deal with it quite effectively.
Right. There are several agencies that deal with it at higher levels than most employees would expect. IRS is one of them. Military agencies take it very seriously, too, because in their a review of a person for promotion, they consider EEO as a part of it. So, I mean, it depends on the agency. It's something that we've heard for years. We've heard this from employee advocacy groups. Congress has heard it. So we're all trying to get enough information to see what can be done. From our stance, we put out the guidance that we can put out. And I want to say Congress has actually taken it serious enough that they implemented the No Fear Act. So it's something that we hear. It's something that's being studied. So I don't want the listener to think that it's being ignored and that we don't consider this an issue. But we want to make sure we get it right, because like Jolinda said, not every situation requires disciplinary action, but there should be a mechanism to do that inquiry.
No, and Jolinda's other point is often you don't know.
Right.
And agencies, even before the No Fear Act came in, I mean, agencies were essentially, you know, in my opinion, imposing, you know, they always had the authority and were doing it when it was appropriate.
One of the other things that we can get into in the few minutes that we have left is the special emphasis program. I believe you mentioned that earlier in the program. What is that?
Special emphasis programs are created in different mechanisms. Usually they were created by executive order. Some of the executive orders date back to the Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy administration, where we were before the Civil Rights Acts were passed. The federal employees have had protection against discrimination before the 64 Act, the 63 Act. It dates back to executive orders that derived in 1948. And there were some executive orders that required special emphasis to issues that were problematic in the federal government, such as the employment of women in the federal government under the Eisenhower, Kennedy years, and then looking at Hispanic employment was a big issue under the Nixon administration, where executive order was created. So specific programs were created to give special emphasis, not to create special hiring or quotas or goals, but how do we do better in reaching those groups? So there are several programs out there to deal with African-Americans, women, Hispanics, and their areas. And how those programs are implemented have been an issue of concern over the last few years. We have observance months where we will talk about an issue, have guest speakers. But is that the crux of special emphasis? So one of the things that we're looking at is how can we give better guidance to agencies in conducting special emphasis programs? Is it about one day with a presenter and food and dance, or is it more about how do we find ways in which to provide meaningful opportunity for groups that may have historically been excluded from opportunity? So Jolinda and her team had actually developed a very nice course for disability program managers, which is one of the special emphasis programs, to really help them understand what is the full range of duties necessary to implement that special emphasis program. So one of the things that we're going to try to do in the next few fiscal years is to give more clarity and definition. And we're going to work with our partner, OPM, because OPM has great responsibility in this area as well in terms of special emphasis programs, as to how can we utilize these programs how they were intended to be used versus what we've seen it manifest itself in over the last few decades.
In a few seconds that we do have left, I guess we want to let our listeners know that the commission, EEOC commission, is going to have a public meeting Tuesday, March 15th at 1 p.m. and what the topic is going to be on people with mental disabilities.
All right, and we have about 20 seconds, JoLynda, for you to do a final plug on the Executive Leadership Conference. I believe it's May 3rd through 5th in Cambridge, Maryland. Do you want to say a few more words about it?
Absolutely. I just want to reiterate that this conference is an opportunity for leaders and future leaders to get a whole lot of training that they can't get in one area in one conference setting. We have 2.5 days that are jam-packed with classes from FEI, classes from Management Concepts, classes from all over the country and from presenters from all over the country. It's going to be a great opportunity that you don't find anywhere else.
Okay, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much. We'll be back shortly. The Fed Talk is brought to you by Shaw, Bransford, and Roth.